Blog Talk Radio.
I said, friend, let me get that for you, as he rolled his wheelchair toward the door of the restaurant I was going in. I helped the old fella through the door. I could see that his hat said he served in World War II. I shook his hand and said, friend, let me buy dinner for you. He said, son, I wish everyone felt like you do. I watched a tear roll from his eyes. He said, grace. And as he sat there and he talked to God, my heart was in my throat. As I heard him ask, we'd all find a better way. And he said, if we keep on going the way we're going, we're headed for hell on a fast train, not knowing how we got there or how we're gonna come back. They've taken the U right out of the USA and broke the right arm off of the Statue of Liberty. Put out the torch that lights our way. Then they say that it's all politically correct. Help us stand up now, God, or there won't be no America left. He said, son, for God and country, I lost my legs on Omaha Beach. But that's nothing compared to what thousands lost if we continue being free. Once again he said, well, if we keep on going the way we're going, we're headed for hell on a fast train, not knowing how we got there or how we're gonna come back. They're stomping and burning our stars and stripes, not giving a damn for the sacrifice of life that protects that very right. Yet they say it's just the way that they protest. Help us stand up now, God, or there won't be no America left. America lives. America.
For more gross, stupid, and morally deficient funny stuff like you.
Hey, 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 welcome to the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. I am your host, Jeremy Johnson, and I am here with my co-host and partner in crime, Chris Bikerson. Chris, how you doing tonight, my brother?
The bastards ain't killed me yet, Jer.
What do you know? We're just going to keep on rolling, aren't we? Yeah, you haven't caught us yet. You're not going to catch us. We're too quick. We're like Speedy Gonzalez, right?
That's it. We're going to keep on rolling. Catch me if you can. Stop me if you think you got what it takes.
Yeah, exactly. Man, I'm going to tell you what. So we've been hard at work behind the scenes this week. And originally, we were going to follow up this radio show with last week talking about Mena, Arkansas, and the two unsolved murders of two teenagers back in 1987. We were going to follow up with Gary Webb this week, but some things transpired Instead, I reached out to Jeremy Munson, who is a representative for the state of Minnesota, where I reside in. And he agreed to come on air tonight, and he'll be on here shortly. And also a friend of mine, he's a journalist and the CEO of Citizen Stringer News Network, and his name is Stephen Oley. He will come on later in the show and talk about how he's being attacked for his freedom of speech. And that one's an interesting story, and they've got him riled up over that, as they should, because this company that's suing him is very interesting, but we'll get to that here later in the show. I want to get to Representative Jeremy Munson first. He'll be calling in here shortly. We'll bring him on the air, and he's going to talk about a couple different items. And I want you guys to all understand something about Jeremy Munson. He's a representative in the 23B district here in Minnesota, which covers the Mankato area. Which Mankato is a big booming community in southern Minnesota. So that's a lot of responsibility. He won his election against Democrat Leroy McClelland by 64%. He took 64.7% of the votes in that election in 2018. So he's been in office for a few years. And I follow him on social media, and I comment often on his stuff, and some of them I just leave. But I agree with this guy 99% of the time. And the reason I don't agree with him 1% of the time is because I haven't seen all of his other stuff. So I can't say I agree with him 100% if I haven't seen it all. You know what I'm saying? So the guy, in my opinion, is a true patriot. Just really loves his country and loves his state. And these are the kind of candidates that we need in office representing not just his district of 23B, but the state of Minnesota. Those of you that are not from Minnesota, our governor, Governor Walz, through this pandemic, he has killed small businesses. He's a Democrat governor. We have a Democrat district attorney, and both of our senators, Tina Smith and Amy Klobuchar, are both Democrats. We don't have any Republican leadership per se high up in the office in the state of Minnesota. And during the pandemic, Governor Walz shut this state down. No, you couldn't go to the bars, couldn't go to the restaurants. Meanwhile, there's photos of him eating at a restaurant in neighboring state Wisconsin while Minnesota was shut down and no mask and basically, you know, do as I say, not as I do, using those tactics. And I'm one Minnesotan that don't appreciate it or didn't appreciate it and still don't appreciate his totalitarian dictator ways. I think it's wrong. People are responsible enough for themselves to make an informed decision on their health. And when he got information in regarding the COVID-19 virus, his job was to educate the public on what the pros, cons, the dangers of this virus was, and make recommendations to the citizens of the great state of Minnesota, not tell them how to live their life, what to do, and when to do it. That's not his job as a governor. His job is to educate the public and protect them the best way he can through that education and allow the citizens to make their own decisions. Well, in the midst of all this, okay, there's a lot of small businesses locked down. A lot of people lost their jobs. A lot of people had really hard times, went through a lot of hard times in this state and across this country. Before the lockdown ended, he has a friend that owns a candy store in Jordan, Minnesota. They call it the world's largest candy store. He allowed him to open back up as an essential business. And that was a direct, in my opinion, a direct slap to the face of Minnesotans. And through that, Representative Jeremy Munson created a petition and authored legislation in order for counties in Minnesota to secede from Minnesota to South Dakota if they voted on doing so. I don't know exactly where that piece of legislation is at this point, but you know, he wrote that under the context of freedom and liberty. And whenever we have a representative that is watching out for constituents or her constituents, but in this case his, and protecting freedom and liberty and the Constitution, that's what this country was founded on, and that's what this country should continue to be, that's what should continue to be practiced. I find it very encouraging that we have a representative like that. Even though he's not my representative in my district, he still is representing the state of Minnesota in other districts. I believe mine is Michelle Fischbach. Excuse me. Mine is Michelle Fischbach and Gary Dom and Chris Swadzinski, who all three happen to be Republicans in my district. We just had a Democrat that had been in office for decades, and I was in contact with his office numerous times trying to get them on board to help us with the trucking industry and the trucking fight. And I could never just get the ball rolling with them. And then I found out after he got voted out and he voted on a bill against truckers. After he'd been pro-trucker for most of his career, I found out that he voted against truckers. And that really left a really sour taste in my mouth. And I'm just I was just like, sayonara. I'm glad you're gone, dude. You could have chose to do the right thing before you left office, and you chose not to. So that's where that's at, you know, and he's gone. And I don't even remember his name now because it made me so mad I decided to erase it from my memory. So, but, you know, back to Jeremy Munson. He's a small business owner from the Lake Crystal area, Mankato area. He represents quite a few people in that area. And I went over a few of the things that he's been pushing for. Minnesota has said to have, in the fiscal year of 22-23, a surplus of $7.7 billion. And he's working very diligently right now to make sure that that money goes back to the taxpayers and not to the lobbyists that are drooling over that surplus right now, trying to get their hands on grants and all that stuff like that. You know what I mean? So we have to have representation like that in every state, not just Minnesota. I'm talking about Minnesota because that's where I'm from. I know Chris is from Illinois, and I'm sure Chris would appreciate a lot of Jeremy Munson's views. He's also working on some other things, including for the trucking industry, DEF, the diesel exhaust fluid, and that is to so it's not mandated where it's going to become a burden on the farmer and every ordinary day citizens when they have to use this diesel exhaust fluid in their lawn tractors and the garden tractors and the farmers when they have to use it in their farming equipment. Mr. Munson has he farmed for a couple of years with his in-laws, so he has experience in the ag industry. And again, he's a small business owner, so he understands some of the fight that blue-collar workers and blue-collar Minnesotans have to go through. So he should be calling in at any given second here, and when he does, I'm going to throw him on, and I'm going to let him talk about everything that he is trying to legislate and has been trying to fight for. And I see that he's on right now. And so without further ado, And I want you all to please welcome Mr. Jeremy Munson, representative from Minnesota 23B. And you are on the air, Mr. Munson. First of all, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight, and we sure do appreciate it. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Well, thanks for reaching out on social media and inviting me. It's always great to talk to a new group of people and gather some more input on how bad government is.
Yeah, you know, and I was looking at some stuff earlier, Mr. Munson. I see 23B is the Mankato area, and that's a pretty big task to undertake with that kind of a population. It's a pretty good population. The first thing I wanted to touch base on was that petition that you authored, where people could counties could secede from Minnesota to South Dakota. Talk about that a little bit, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's Jeremy. It's not Mr. Munson or anything. We're pretty casual. Then second of all, I don't represent Mankato. I represent about 22 little towns and communities around Mankato. So it's really rural, like over 1,000 square miles, and so small towns. My biggest town is less than 5,000 people. So very rural. Dealing with all these with all the small town in rural Minnesota, agriculture, so many people just want government out of our business. I get a lot of requests about, why can't we be more like South Dakota? Why can't we be more like Iowa or North Dakota? And their whole tax code and regulations and everything is very different than what we have here in Minnesota. And so, you know, I ran for office to make us more like South Dakota as far as their taxes and regulations. And I could fight for, based on what I've learned in the last few years in the legislature, I could fight for 20 years and maybe – slow the decrease in our freedom, right? Because Republicans have had the majority in the House and Senate in St. Paul, and they still let the Democrats get away with stuff. They compromise. And so if we want to actually change and be like South Dakota, the easiest way to go about that is to just secede by county, which is what I was following what they're doing in Oregon, in several counties in southern Oregon who have nothing to, they don't like what's happening in Portland, and they want to secede to Idaho. And so they got legislation through, and the counties have been voting to secede to Idaho, and if they get their way and it gets approved, then Idaho would have West Coast property.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that about Oregon, but I certainly understand why they want to. And I apologize for the Mankato comment. I looked at the map there, and it looked like Mankato was right in it. I'm just east of you right now in Owatonna right now.
It's gerrymandering. They just kind of go right around Mankato, and that's just the district that I represent. And so, I represent a lot of people in Mankato because I write state law, and a lot of Republicans in a little bubble of blue in Mankato reach out to me to help write legislation or answer questions that their rep might not get back to them on. So, secession, I think is it sounds drastic, but Congress actually approves border changes frequently. Usually just like a river goes back and forth enough that it like basically cuts out a piece of one of the states and pushes it, and it's better to be in the next state. And so they just authorize a border change. And this would, if this would pass the Minnesota legislature, authorize the counties to vote. All the counties that are neighboring a state could vote to join. And then once we have the new boundaries drawn, we just go to Congress and say, hey, here's our new map. And they could approve it or not. And I honestly think that the liberal Democrats in St. Paul would just assume, let us leave, right? Make everybody happy.
And I would assume that we would be happy to.
I've had so much hate mail about this. You know, why don't you just effing leave? You just go. And I'm like, I don't want to go to South Dakota. I love my community. I love my neighbors, but I just want to choose better governance, and that means I would rather have a legislature in South Dakota and Pierre representing me and Governor Noem, then Governor Walz and the Democratic majority in the legislature in St. Paul.
And I think a lot of us feel the same way in rural Minnesota, because I'm from rural Minnesota, and we're tired of being legislated and dictated by votes that come from the metro area. Our whole government, basically, in the metro area, the Senate, senators and government governor are elected into office basically from the votes in the liberal-held metropolitan area and a little bit in the Iron Range. But the rest of the state, for the most part, is all red. We don't see things eye to eye compared to what they do in the metro area. And out of Governor Walz's own mouth, there's nothing out in rural Minnesota except for rocks and cows. You know, joking or not, we don't appreciate it. So
Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead. I was done.
I have to kind of remind people. I mean, I pick on Democrats a lot, but it's also important to hold Republicans' feet to the fire when it's called for. And when I came into the legislature 3 years ago in a special election, the Republicans held the majority in both the House and the Senate. Governor Dayton was our governor. He's a Democrat. But I watched Republicans grow government by, you know, more than 10%. It was ridiculous how much spending and programs they want to fund. Many Republicans are just as bad as Democrats. And it's so much easier to give people their own money back in the form of all these government programs than it is to actually cut government spending and return the money to the people and say, keep more of what you made. I don't understand why it's difficult for them to do that, but we need to learn how to sell freedom and liberty and tell people, you know, teach people how valuable it is to actually have control of their own lives.
Yeah, and you know, and first of all, let me just apologize that we have like a 1 second delay here between when somebody gets done talking, so it kind of messes us up sometimes. But that kind of carries into my, you know, the $7.7 billion surplus that Minnesota is said to have in 2022-23, I believe is what it is. And what was your proposal on that that surplus?
Yeah, it's been the same since I came in the legislature, and we started having these annual surpluses that come in, more money than we need. And like I've talked before, that the budget has grown by 10 or 15% every biennium. So it's not like we're spending less. We're spending more, and the projections are fairly accurate, but we keep on getting larger surpluses. And before I get into what the $7.7 billion is, it's also important to know that Republicans put forward a law that says when there is a surplus, a third of it has to go away into a rainy day fund. So we actually put it in a special, it's called the budget reserve account, and that it's not supposed to be used unless we run into a deficit. But all the surpluses, instead of giving it back to the people, they squirrel it away in St. Paul, and that, for some reason, they put a maximum amount in there. It could be like, it's a percentage of our budget, but it's basically $2.4 billion in this treasure chest of taxpayer money that is above and beyond what we needed over the previous several years. And then this year we have a $7.7 billion surplus of extra money sitting around, plus we have a bunch of other federal money that came in on top of that. But just those two alone, the surplus and the budget reserve, is $10 billion. And so my proposal is to take all of that money and send it back to taxpayers, people that actually pay into. So if your taxes that you owe the state is more than what, you know, the state gives you away for tax credits and junk like that, then you would get a portion of it. And so, you know, we're working on the exact numbers now, but it might be somewhere between $4,000 and $6,000 per taxpayer, or, you know, maybe $5,000 to $10,000 per married couple. That's a significant amount of money that people could get back and make their own decisions on what they want to spend it on.
Right. And that money that the Republicans proposed, that one-third that goes into a fund, is that an interest-bearing account?
No. I mean, the problem – I'm going to defend the senator that wrote that, because there is, if you're in the minority all the time, whenever there's a deficit, the Democrats want to raise taxes. And so their idea was, when there's a surplus, instead of the Democrats spending it right away, they could squirrel it away so that when there is a deficit, they can just go to this treasure chest and use that to help fund government as opposed to raising taxes. The problem is that because we have this budget reserve account, no one ever looks to cut spending, ever, because you have this many billions of dollars of extra cash laying around. When times are tight, you're never going to start looking. You're never going to look in the couch cushions. You're never going to look at the programs that should be eliminated or that should be thinned down in where we could save money. They just never do it. So as a result, government just grows and grows and grows, and this treasure chest of money has actually become a very, you know, it's really hindered our ability to rein in government waste. And so that's why I think it needs to go away. We just need to return it all to the taxpayers. Now, the instead of sending people checks, a lot of the Republicans are talking about tax cuts, which sounds great. Some of this money, a lot of it, is actually kind of a one-time thing. So to make significant tax cuts right now, I mean, I'm always for it. I'd vote for it. But it's kind of irresponsible when that money might not continue. But when what Republicans are talking about now in the Senate are targeted tax cuts, which are like – It's keyword here is targeted, because that means that lobbyists and special interest groups are going to be coming out heavy and saying, oh, you know, the big Cargills of the world need to triple the ethanol tax credit, or, you know, it's all these specific taxes that they're going to be lobbying for, and it's going to prevent the playing field from being level, right? There's going to be certain tax cuts for certain people and not for others. All these business interests are lobbying legislators and funding campaigns for reelection. It's going to be just a nightmare. If we just give it back to the people, then we don't have the money to play with in government, and people can make their own decisions what they want to do with their money.
Yeah, and you and I both know that anytime you give free rein to the government to spend your money, it doesn't end, never ends well. So.
Yeah.
You know, when I was talking to you on the phone, we were talking about the diesel exhaust fluid. Talk about that a little, because that kind of intrigued me a little bit. I'm a truck driver. I use DEF in my truck. But you were talking more on the lines of the ag community and regular just Joe Schmoes in small rural communities or anywhere that use lawn tractors or any of that, what kind of a burden that would bring onto the state of Minnesota, Minnesota's residents.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the technology of DEF, the diesel exhaust fluid. I think it was well-intentioned, right? They want to reduce the amount of particulate that's emitted into the atmosphere, and diesel does not burn as clean as gasoline. It's also important to know that the EPA tracks the amount of particulate that's burned like per gallon of fuel. So they're comparing diesel to gasoline, even though diesel gets roughly twice or at least 50% more fuel efficiency than gasoline. They don't count the amount of particulate per mile. It's the amount per gallon. So I think it's a flawed formula to start with. But DEF works moderately well when you are running long-haul trucks, you know, over-the-road trucks. The DEF system breaks down and the sensors go bad, and it's bad for the whole system. When you do short runs, you do a lot of idling. Those two things are really bad. So school buses, for instance, it's horrible for school buses. And I used to have all diesel vehicles, just, you know, small trucks. And the DEF sensors went out every year, $800-900 to replace these stupid sensors or a DEF tank heater. Right now, my Chevy 3/4 ton or my wife's truck is on limp mode because it says there's no DEF in it, and there is. So, you know, if I wasn't a legislator, I would just have it torn out. But it's a hassle. And then, you know, the school buses now are going back to being gas. They just can't deal with the DEF systems. And it also impacts construction equipment. So, you know, construction equipment idles a lot. And ag equipment, combines, tractors, the value of a 10-year-old tractor is so much higher than an 8-year-old tractor if it's, you know, pre-DEF or post-DEF. You know, and I explained to legislators in Congress. I sat down with Thomas Massie, who was a great congressman, and I said, I was explaining this to him, and then once I said the next part, he got it. I said, you know, up until just recently, they were selling brand new semi-trucks without a motor so that you could take your old motor and glide it into your new one. Like, that is how bad this DEF system is, that people would actually buy a brand new truck and put an older pre-DEF motor in it.
And I can attest to that. My first truck that I bought was 6 years ago. It was a used one, but in the 2 years that I owned that truck, I spent well over $40,000 in repairs on that DEF system. It was nothing but a nightmare to me, and almost put me in bankruptcy. And that's no joke.
And you do long trips or short trips?
I'm long haul.
Okay.
Yep. Well, but that was a nightmare.
Well, that's good reason why we need to rethink it. There's other things we can do to protect the environment in an equal way, but that was just horrible. I drive German cars, and so I've got two BMWs, and I had an Audi. They were all diesels. My BMW has 235,000 miles on it, and it runs great, except for my diesel exhaust filter is clogged, it's particulate, packed with particulate, and they want $6,000 for a new filter. The car's only worth $4,000, you know? So I'm going to basically throw my entire car away someday because of the stupid DEF system.
Yeah, and that's the problem with that, is the particulate filters get clogged in a truck and even in a car. It's a financial burden to get those things replaced, and I agree with you on that stance. And you know, like I was telling the audience before you come on, I said I followed you on social media, and I said I agree with 99% of the things that you say and do on social media. I've followed you for a while now, and I said there's 1% that I don't agree with them on, and that's because I don't know about it yet. So my guess is I'm probably closer to the 99.9%, but. Since I have you on here, and by the way, if you guys are listening over the internet here, there is a guest call-in number if you would like to get on the air and have a conversation with Representative Jeremy Munson. And that phone number is 516-387-1733, 516-387-1733. And just press the number 1 once you get connected, and that'll let us know that you want to talk. And Jeremy has agreed to talk to a few people if you want to call in and talk. So I do have a question from the internet. A guy by the name of Mick Chevelle asked him what happened to the frontline workers' pay bonus.
Yeah, the frontline workers' pay bonus was money that was part of the billions of dollars that rained down on the state during the COVID crisis, where Congress just passed these multi-trillion-dollar bills to just like take care of COVID and throw money at it. We had already spent a ton of money giving to hospitals and stuff to expand capacity. We had all this leftover money, and if the legislature didn't spend it, then when we ended our regular session, the governor actually got the authority to do whatever the hell he wanted with it. And so as some part of agreement at the end of session, Gazelka, who's running for governor and was a Senate majority leader, and Walz is running for governor too, they kind of mutually agreed that they would just give this money out to a whole group of people that maybe were wrong during the pandemic that they want to win votes from. And so, I mean, it's clearly a buying votes from people by sending them money. And that bill, they set up a committee that would determine who should get the money. And that committee sat and fought and fought and fought and never could agree on who to give it to. Republicans wanted to give it to police and firemen and first responders and nurses. And the Democrats wanted to give it to the teachers' union members and daycare, child care providers, and the pool was just getting bigger and bigger. And anybody that worked in the service industry, the service employees union members, and it really went nowhere. It turned out that people would get, you know, $50, which is kind of almost an insult. And, you know, my opinion was,
right,
the people that were the people that Governor Walz told could not work because they were not essential, you know, and they lost their jobs. He didn't get anything out of this. And so I don't like the principle of it, and I was going to vote against it. But that committee could never come to an agreement on who should get paid, and so we never came back into special session. And when there was a hint that maybe we could come to an agreement, there was also the threat of Jan Malcolm, the commissioner of health, being fired by the Senate. And so we didn't come back. And maybe there's an agreement now, but we're going to be back in regular session at the end of January. So the governor is just going to wait and let us come back in the regular session.
Okay. You know, and you brought up a good point about Governor Walz labeling people essential or non-essential. And I've been out here since the very beginning of this pandemic as a truck driver. I drove all over this country. And there's one thing I found out really quickly, that there is no such thing as a non-essential worker. We are all essential, whether you pump gas or you cook a hamburger at McDonald's. To keep this country moving and the wheels moving on this great machine that we have in this country, it takes everyone to do their part. The cashier at the gas station and like I said, the cooks, in order for the truckers to keep moving. And in the first month and a half to 3 months was insanity out here. There was no food anywhere. There was a shortage of us being able to get hot food. Most of the restaurants were closed down. It wasn't very pleasant out here for the first couple, you know, 2-3 months. And I'm insulted by Walz's commentary quite often. And I don't think he's looking at the big picture sometimes. And when you say that there's workers out here that are non-essential, that's a smack in the face to those people that work, because we need them all. They all pay taxes too. That's how you get a $7.7 billion surplus.
Well, one of the things that separates conservatives from liberals is our willingness to be reliant on government. And you have such a stronger feeling of self-worth when you're doing it on your own. You're feeding your family. You've started a business or whatever it is that you do. And then for someone to come along and say, no, you can't go to work. It's insulting. There's a woman named Lisa Hansen from Albert Lea who had a coffee shop and was told she had to close. And, you know, I met with her. It was, you know, Governor Walz doesn't have the constitutional authority to write law, you know, and enforce it. He can't write his own law saying there's going to be fines or that he'll jail you. Well, today she had her day in court, and she's going to jail for 90 days. And the judge is upholding this unconstitutional law that Governor Walz wrote that's sending her to jail for opening her business, trying to provide for her employees and for her family. It's unconscionable, but this is happening.
And we're seeing it all over. They're just walking all over the Constitution. I do see that we do have a caller that wants to get on the air with us, Jeremy. And his name is Brian, and so I'm going to add him on right now. Brian, you are on the air with Representative Jeremy Munson. How are you tonight, Brian?
Oh, I just got stopped for the night. I don't know if it's a bad thing. You already recognize my number and my name. Maybe I did tomorrow.
That's a good thing, my friend. What do you got tonight? What do you want to talk to Jeremy Munson about?
Well, we're talking about this notion of government overreach and such. I've got to ask this question because, I mean, it's a relevant question, at least in my mind. What's preventing states? Now, keep in mind, I'm not one of your constituents. I live in an entirely different state. But what's preventing the states and, for that matter, the local counties using the 9th and 10th Amendment? I mean, there's a technical term for it. It's called nullification, and we see it in modern day. California has pretty much completely nullified all immigration laws, and nobody bats an eye at that. What would be so wrong with the state, in essence, using nullification for truly unconstitutional laws?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, Brian, and thanks for asking that. We looked into that right away. First of all, I've never really tried to debate the science of COVID or the vaccines. It's not my thing. I'm not a doctor, but I am I write laws and public policy, so it's immediately important for me to understand this whole pandemic and how it relates to public policy, and then always to go back to the Constitution to say, do we have the authority to do this, or does government have the authority to do this? And, you know, you're right. The 10th Amendment should prohibit a lot of this stuff from happening. And so one of the things I did immediately was I researched on how to have a city declare themselves an economic sanctuary city, and say, you know what, we're not going to abide by Walz's orders, and we're just going to be open. And we can't treat people differently, and so I you know, created resolutions, had cities try to pass them, and several cities were close to doing that, but the company that insures them, they got their insurance through like the Minnesota Association of Cities, and their insurance policy, you know, people called and said, if you pass this resolution and a restaurant opens in your town and somebody gets sick from COVID and dies, they'll be able to sue the city, and we're not going to cover you. And so the city backed down, a couple of cities backed down from passing those laws because of threats from insurance, and of course probably, you know, from Democrats ultimately. But it's that's one aspect of it. And the other part is that in the state of Minnesota, we've had so many more Democrat governors than Republican governors that our judicial system is out of whack, and state courts are heavily stacked with Democrat judges, like the judge today that ruled against Lisa Hansen, the coffee shop owner, like the judge that ruled against our Secretary of State, our Secretary of State that changed election law unilaterally, as with a bunch of other states, to change the rules of the election without the legislature say so. She was the campaign manager for Minnesota's U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar, a Democrat. So we need a Republican governor in our state to start appointing a ton of judges so that we can bring this in balance again. I sued our governor almost immediately after he declared an emergency last year, and it went all the way to the Minnesota Supreme Court. But all the judges underneath them, as we went, the appellate judge, they were all Democratic appointees. And it was frustrating to have to wait so long. It was well over a year and 3 months before the U.S. Supreme Court or the Minnesota Supreme Court was scheduled to hear our case. And the week before we were supposed to have our case heard, the governor ended his emergency. So they basically threw it out and said it's no longer an issue.
Do you think
I understand.
Go ahead, Brian. Sorry.
Because I understand that to a great degree, you know, trying to do things in the quote-unquote legal manner. But I guess mostly what I'm asking is, if the government comes down and says you will do this, whether it's legal or – well, let's be honest, most of it's illegal. I think that we kind of have a – right and, frankly speaking, a responsibility to in essence say, no, we don't have, you know, we're not going to do this. I mean, like I said, that'd be nullification at a state level, but I think we should even move it down to the county and city levels. I mean, our governor, you know, he's a joke, but for the most part, he said, Seth, you know, hey, you're going to do this, and this, and my county and my home city basically said, well, you can make us if you want to, but we're not doing that. And so I think that we have to kind of move towards that direction in a lot of it.
I would love to see a time when we would have more local leaders who would take a stand and lead and be principled leaders. We don't have that in Minnesota. You know, like I said, with the cities cowering to, you know, threats, that we have school boards that wanted to take a stand and ditch the mask mandate in Minnesota. They were threatened with lawsuits. And, you know, small towns of, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 people, they can't handle a lawsuit for tens of millions of dollars and the legal defense, you know, that would be necessary. So that ultimately these lawsuits just drown people who have legitimate cases they should be fighting. And, you know, we do have in Minnesota federal judges who tend to be more conservative. So if there are cases that we can take through the federal side, and I did file lawsuits on the federal side against the governor, but those take even longer to be heard in court than the state courts. So it's just time. And I think just like we saw with Biden with his vaccine mandates, he did them anyways, knowing they were unconstitutional, but he would buy him time to get through this before the judges threw them out.
You know, that it's similar to what Elon Musk just come out and said about the government being a monopoly, and basically they're criminals. And they're filing lawsuits on communities, cities, counties, people that they're supposed to represent, because they're not following orders. And the last time I checked, we live in a free country that has a constitution that we have certain unalienable rights. And I want to understand why these bureaucrats and some of these state governments feel that they have the right to dictate people's lives and tell them what they should do rather than recommend what they should do for their health. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I mean, I certainly think that we've set an awful precedent with all of these restrictions and lockdowns that we did over a virus, a respiratory disease. You know, I had COVID 19 years ago when the SARS-CoV-1 virus came through, and it was horrible. I had a fever for like 6 days. It was just miserable. I've had influenza B, which is like, you know, the real flu, and, you know, that was even worse. And as we speak right now, I have COVID. And so I came up to my apartment in St. Paul to isolate myself from my family because my wife is going through cancer treatment and dealing with COVID. But I had a fever for one day, and I feel pretty lousy, but, you know, I'll get through it. But if we did this for this virus, what are we going to do to save an additional life? Are we going to ban cigarettes? Are we going to ban sugary sodas? Or how much of your life should we be controlling to save lives? A lot of people die from smoking. A lot of people die from car accidents and all the other things. You know, alcohol is a terrible drug for our society. Why is it legal? You know, there's no end to what government will try to nose itself into, since it set an awful precedent through what it's done in COVID.
Exactly. Brian, did you have anything else you wanted to add here?
No, not particularly. Nope. Just kind of an odd thought, like I said, about the whole nullification. I honestly do think that we're coming to a point that people are going to have to stop worrying about what the government's going to say and just do it and see what happens. I know that's kind of a mean way of saying it, and I'm not advocating for anybody to be violent, but, I mean, let's be frank here. You know, 1775, that's kind of what we did.
Right.
You know, we did what we did and said, what are you going to do?
Well,
Brian, I appreciate the call, Brian.
Right.
I'm going to put you back on your microphone, okay? Okay, that was Brian, everybody. Sorry about that. But go ahead, and you can respond to that, Jeremy.
Yeah, you know, Brian's right. Because I took such a bold stance against the governor right away, when most Republicans were kind of cowering, there was about six or seven of us that were immediately, you know, responding, talking about the constitutionality, what he's doing. And because of that, I started getting phone calls from all across the state. Every time somebody's business was closed, I had property owners calling me because they sold the condo that they used to live in when they got married, and they've always kept it as a rental. And now the person's not paying rent and hasn't paid rent in 9 months, and they're losing their home to foreclosure because of it. And, you know, do something. You know, it was with a mask mandate. People were so frustrated. And then, when does this end? When is your lawsuit being heard? And I said, you know, honestly, it ends when people say it ends. Like Brian said, people just have to stop wearing masks, stop complaining about it, and just stop wearing them. And if you're frustrated about your business being shut down, open up. Right, we started this Minnesota Reopen Coalition, and there was going to be 500 restaurants that just reopened all at once. And, you know, you can't shut us all down. And then because of threats of lawsuits and everything else, threats of losing liquor licenses, most of them failed to reopen simultaneously. But but there's safety in numbers. And if a large enough people take a stand, it ends. And I think that's what's happening with the vaccine mandates at employers, right? Enough employees said, no, I'm not going to do it. And in this day and age, in this workforce, they don't want to lose 5% of their workforce. They can't risk, you know, firing 5% of the workforce. So they just backed off. You call their bluff. And that's what people just need to take a stand. Government isn't going to protect them in this case, especially minority of lawmakers, but a minority of the public can take a stand.
Yeah, see, and I've been advocating for the healthcare workers all over the country. I have followers from all over the country that are healthcare workers because they know I'm advocating for them. I actually drove my truck up to St. Paul to the Capitol when they had that big rally up there where Dr. Scott Jensen spoke. I was in that audience, that crowd of people up there, and the things I heard on live video, I was doing a live TikTok at the time, and for my stances that I've taken for standing up with the healthcare workers against what I call tyrant behavior and unconstitutional mandates, I had over, 80,000 followers on TikTok, and TikTok banned me permanently because of that, because the people that were opposing us standing there were calling us super spreaders, and they were just downright mean on the live video. And what they don't understand is there's no reason that anybody should be losing their careers over a mandate. That's not government protection. That's government overreach. And it sickens me because I've listened to all these horror stories from all these healthcare workers, but there are so many of them that are brave that will stand strong. And if they're brave enough to stand strong against this, I have the obligation to stand with them as their fellow American, in my opinion. So, but, you know, I don't know what I don't know what we can do or how we can say it to people to make them understand that there are representatives and senators, congressmen all over the United States that are willing to stand up, but they need to hear you. They need to hear, you know, what you need them to do, what your concerns are. And I noticed when I looked you up on Google, you have your email and your phone number right there. You're not. It was relatively easy. Well, it wasn't relatively easy. It was very easy for me to get a hold of you. So if that doesn't tell your constituents something, I don't know what will. I literally got a hold of you within, 15 minutes to an hour, whatever it was. That is the sign of a good representative, somebody that actually listens and communicates with you. So for that, I appreciate you, Jeremy. And all I can say is keep doing what you're doing, man. I surely appreciate you and your social media posts. I enjoy looking at them and your point of view and getting on there and just throwing my two cents in. It looks like a lot of people agree with you too, but I did see on some of your social media posts that you took a beating on some of your stances, and you handle yourself very well. That's all I can say.
Well, I try to respond with facts and reason, and I've never blocked anybody from my page, and I think it's important to have a diverse conversation, right? You can't just I have friends in the legislature that ban their trolls and they just get this big following of people that just agree with everything they say. And it doesn't bring them back to reality. We represent a diverse group of people. I'm in a 65% Republican district, but it doesn't mean Republicans believe everything I believe either. You know, I've taken some pretty bold stances on marijuana or cannabis because it just, in my philosophy, is less government. And I don't think we're winning the war on drugs, but it takes more to explain to my constituents my stance on things. And so while I believe I have a majority of my constituents supporting each of my issues, it might not be the same group of people. And so I have to continually involve a lot of people in my district in conversations about legislation to And it takes a lot of explaining to do when I vote the way I do, and I vote against all these huge multi-subject omnibus bills, those, you know, 1,000-page bills. Even there's a lot of good stuff in it, I'm voting against every single one of them because our state constitution requires that each bill be a single subject, and that those aren't. So, but if I carry one of those things around with me when I go to campaign and I show it to them and I say, I got this thing 3 hours before I had to vote on it, would you vote on it? Every person says, well, hell no, I wouldn't vote on this. It's a good, well, that's exactly what I do.
And that's what they're doing in not just the state level, but the federal level too, as they're throwing 2,600 page legislation in front of everybody and say, okay, you're voting on this tonight, or you're going to vote on this tomorrow. There's no possible way for you to even read all of it, number one. And number two, let's quit lumping everything in together. That's what's gotten us into this mess in this country, in my opinion, is all these little special tag-ons that they add onto these bills, and it hurts people, and it's not helping. If you vote one-on-one, yeah, you're going to have a busier day, but if you vote on one subject at a time, I guarantee you this country wouldn't be in the mess it's in. I promise you that.
Yes.
I follow along with quite regularly.
People in the middle, especially, and I would say people across the whole spectrum of the political divide, they want government to actually be effective and get some things done. And I would say that there's a lot of bipartisan legislation that we could pass almost unanimously. But whenever there's a really good piece of bipartisan legislation, that becomes the core of an omnibus bill. Because if you're on the other side of the aisle from me and we both like this nugget in the middle, I just keep in the majority, I'll just keep on stacking highly partisan legislation on top of that until it becomes so unpalatable that you won't vote for it. And then I'll just take a couple off and then we can agree to pass this thing. And so the really good bipartisan legislation never comes on its own. It's always wrapped in a bunch of crap and decorated like a Christmas tree. And that's the problem. That's where we've broken down in the legislature, both here at the state and in D.C.
And that sounds like common sense logic to me. And honestly, I don't hear a lot of that coming out of politics anymore these days. It's a lot of I call it extremism, basically. But no, I do appreciate that. And but I didn't know that you had COVID. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked you to come on. I'd feel bad that I bothered you when you're not feeling good. But I do appreciate you coming
actually,
on, Jeremy.
I'm not doing anything but sitting up here in isolation anyway, so it worked out really good to do it this week.
Give you something to do, right?
Yep.
So, no, I appreciate you coming on. I'll let you go so you can get back to getting rested, and we need people like you in office, Jeremy, and I sure do appreciate you. So keep up the good fight, and again, thank you so much for joining.
All right, thanks for having me on.
All right, catch you later. All right, everybody, that was Representative Jeremy Munson. And I tell you what, it's always nice to hear from your local legislators. And I what do you think, Chris? I really think that guy is really good for the state of Minnesota, full of common sense, and really I'm impressed by him.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not a Minnesotan, and so I wasn't even familiar with him until you started talking about the fact that he was going to come on the show. And I tell you, I'm spot on. I agree with pretty much everything that he had to say, and I think you and I have talked about this before, when it comes to these unlawful mandates and corrupt courts that aren't following the law. I think we're inching closer and closer to that Velvet Revolution situation like they had over there. I believe it was Czechoslovakia where they had the Velvet Revolution. And it was called Velvet because it didn't involve actual warfare, actual shots being fired. Basically, the people just got tired of their government and the government's mandates and their tyrannical dictatorial control. And I guess they got the military and law enforcement behind them, And they just kind of all decided that they weren't going to go along with it anymore. They just, everybody just quit obeying orders. Everybody just did their own thing and said, whatever, we're going back to the old way of doing business, and we're going to do things our way. And they literally turned their government into a bunch of talking heads that no one paid attention to. The military and law enforcement quit following orders. They wouldn't carry anything out. And basically, they drove their government crazy, and they all resigned and ended up getting a new government, you know, just because, I mean, literally. I mean, they held a revolution and changed governments, and not just the people, but their style of government, just because everybody said, okay, we're done with this, and we're not going to go along with it anymore, and quit complying. And I think that's kind of,
well,
that's kind of where we're at.
I have Steve Oatley on the line. I'm just going to bring our audience up to date of what is going on with Steve Oatley. I met Steve Oatley down in Washington, D.C. when I was down there protesting along with 200 other truck drivers on Constitution Avenue last May. Steve Oatley come down there to cover the protest. One of the few media sources that actually did cover I think actually the only one. But he was down there. He come down and covered what we were doing. I stayed in contact with him. And that's been almost 2 years ago, about a year and a half ago. Since then, he is now a journalist and CEO of Citizen Stringer News that is under attack by a company attacking Steve's First Amendment right, free speech. And you know what? I don't want to make him wait. He's a busy man, so I'm going to bring him on right now. Without further ado, this is Steve Oatley with Citizen Stringer News. And let me get him on
here
right
Jay,
now.
How you doing?
I'm good, Steve. How's it going with you, man?
I'm good. I mean, as good as I can be, but I'm good. Just chucking along, I guess.
Listen, for the audience, if you don't, I want you guys to go give this guy a follow, Citizen Stringer News. All summer last year, Steve had on live feeds of riots that were happening all across this country that the mainstream media would not cover, and he had them on live. Me and my friend Tony, we watched this all summer long last summer, and everybody's got the wrong, you know, idea about BLM, like they're peaceful protesters. Not so much. But Steve, why don't you I got you on, and I don't want to take too much of your time. I want you to be able to get your story out. Tell us about what's going on with you and what happened with this company suing you.
Yeah, so, you know, like you said, I covered all the riots and stuff, and I guess the best way to talk about it is just how I got to doing this. I didn't go to school for journalism or anything like that. I was actually a freight broker and like a C-level executive in the logistics and supply chain industry for 15 years. I started what was originally called Freight Broker Live a couple of years ago, kind of with the same reasons that I did Citizen Stringer, is I realized that a lot of the media that was going out in the trucking industry wasn't there's no other way to say it, but real. You know, it was advertised, or it was fluff, or it was written by people that didn't understand the industry. So I saw a gap there, and I wanted to try to bridge the gap between truck drivers and freight brokers. So I started Freight Broker Live, and that's how I ended up meeting you when I went down to cover those protests. And you know, we grew pretty quick with Freight Broker Live just because nobody was doing what we were doing. And when all these riots and stuff started happening last year, I don't even know why. I think I was just up one night and I saw them on social media, and I couldn't believe that the next day I didn't see them on the news. And then the next night I was up and I was watching them all, and all over the country. And I'm not talking about like an isolated riot in Portland and you know, 2 weeks later. No, at night in cities across America, they were actively rioting. I think the most we ever had was 8 declared riots in one night while it was all going on at the same time. And the media was just oblivious to it. So we started really covering that. And then I realized that the same issue, the reason why I got involved in covering the freight news, the same thing was going on in mainstream media, where they weren't covering either one, they were selectively choosing what they were going to cover in terms of topics, or they were flat out lying. The mainstream, they were pushing their own agenda and calling it news. And, of course, that ticked me off. So I decided that we would move from the transportation side and just really just try to break the way news is reported. And so we started Citizen Stringer. We really tried as much as we could to just report honestly. Like our website, citizenstringer.com, is more focused on just providing a really quick look at the news. Here's the story. Here's something you didn't know. And then we try to end it with a question, so it makes you kind of engage and think about it. But we another segment of Citizen Stringer is we also do investigative reporting. One of our viewers, I moved from Florida to Virginia in June, and within a couple of days of moving up here, one of our viewers contacted me and said that there were some strange BLM protests taking place in Staunton, Virginia, which is a small town of 14,000 people. It's not a big town. And, that, you know, for BLM protests to be happening there, if it was isolated, that's one thing. But they sent me some photos of the protesters. The protesters were all wearing lapel mics. They were all mic'd up. And they had full camera crews there. And I'm like, that's weird. So I grabbed a camera. I grabbed our live view system. And I went down and set up and started recording it. And they were literally – they had a script, and they're yelling all obscenities at the police department, and there were some counter-protesters there that were there to support police, and they're protesting outside of the police department. And it wasn't like, you know, I had covered BLM protests and riots for over a year, every single day, you know, for hours and hours and hours. So I've seen all the protests. I could forecast to the minute when a protest was actually going to turn into a riot. And, you know, it almost became like a game because we could say, oh, well, nothing's going to happen until about 9:45 because we're so used to the structure of these things. And for anyone to say they're not organized, they're dumb. But this was different because these people had scripts with them. They had pieces of paper and a professional film crew. So we started looking into it. Turns out they were shooting what they're calling a reality TV show. Many of your viewers are probably familiar with Dog the Bounty Hunter. That was one thing that was kind of weird because Bonnie Chapman, Dog's daughter, was one of the orchestrators of this protest. And I was like, this is just too weird. So we started a deep dive into the company that was behind this protest, because it was a group of kids that were all from Illinois. So the majority of them were from out of state. And then there were three adults. The three adults, we found out, all worked for this company that dealt with this immigration thing. And that story is too long. I guess I got to say it now, the immigration side, this company called Nexus Services, essentially this immigration, bonding company is what they are. So essentially, if someone comes across the border, they declare that they're seeking asylum, ICE will arrest them, switch over, or Border Patrol will arrest them. They go into ICE custody. They're given a bond, which is an immigration bond. The bonding requirements are so strict for asylum seekers because, well, and anyone that's here illegally, because they came here illegally, they're likely not going to show up to court. I think there's a 60% chance that they do not show up to court. So the bonding requirements are super high. Bail bondsmen don't take those bonds. This company found a way to be the middleman. So they essentially facilitate it, get the person out of jail, hook an ankle monitor up to them, and then make the person that the asylum seeker make them pay for the ankle monitor through the monthly payments. They're currently under investigation by three attorney generals because they're not applying the bond payment, or they're not applying the payments for these ankle monitors to the actual bond. So they're essentially just keeping these people, you know, locked up and paying them, you know, with these ankle monitors without telling them. And that's been widely reported. Everybody's reported on it. New Yorker, CBS, Fox News, everybody's reported on it. It's a legal scam, essentially. But the thing that piqued my interest, we wrote about that. And then we just kept writing about this company. The company has been sued by so many people. They're sued virtually every vendor they've been sued by, and then they just don't pay their bills. They end up, you know, just fighting it, filing motion after motion after motion. Anybody that speaks out against them, they file, lawsuits against. We just kept covering it. We kept covering it, and we learned that there's the protests all originated around these lawsuits. So, you know, there was protests. They were sued by a nonprofit down by Philly. as soon as that happened, within a couple of days, there was a protest out there outside of that location. They were sued by a company out of Chicago for a contract, breach of contract or something like that, for non-payment. They ended up staging a protest outside of there, all on the guise that that information was leaked, even though it was never leaked. And they didn't even hide their involvement. They showed up wearing Nexus shirts protesting outside of these businesses. So it was really weird. We documented all that. And then the last one, we found out that an affiliated company, at this time we learned it's an affiliated company. We didn't even realize that that company existed. We thought it was just Nexus Services because it was under that address. We found out they had a contract to handle all of the fingerprinting for the state for that area, so Augusta County area of Virginia, for anybody that was seeking any licensing. So whether you're trying to be an EMT, a firefighter, a cop, a babysitter, a nurse, a doctor, if the state said you had to go get fingerprinted to do it, and you chose to your hometown, you know, Verona or Augusta County, it was Nexus where you would go and do it. But which that piques my interest again, because this company is protesting outside of a police station, suing a police department, and yet they're responsible for fingerprinting new recruits. So we wrote an article on that, you know, and we're pretty careful in the way we do our journalism. You know, we fact check everything multiple times. We have a kind of a three strike policy. So we actually cancel more stories than we write. Because we have to verify every single thing that we talk about three times or more before any of our authors will publish it. And we do it deliberately like that to make sure that we're not, you know, screwing up and getting liable. On Monday, I was sued for $3 million by this company, the company that apparently had the fingerprint contract. And again, didn't know them, didn't know who they were. But apparently, because of our coverage, the contract was canceled by the main vendor, and I've been sued now for $3.5 million. Now, the complaint is complete and utter fallacy, all the way from the very first sentence of it, of the first paragraph, to the very end. It's a blatant, like, I mean, the attorney that I hired, he's like, it looks like a child wrote this complaint. And you know, we sent it to several other attorneys, and they just can't believe it. We filed a motion for a motion for sanctions against the attorney, because my attorney believes that an attorney has a responsibility to make sure that the allegations that they're reporting are true, and it's very clear that these aren't. The goal of these lawsuits, because then I was served with another one for $2 million, $2.5 million yesterday. So now we're up to $5.5 million worth of lawsuits for my coverage of this company. And what they're alleging is the things that I can clearly back up because of the way we do our business, they're alleging that those are not true, or like, for example, saying that they don't have any connection to Nexus, when the guy that is suing me, Eric Schneider, says that he has no connection to Nexus, but his LinkedIn page says he's the director of risk management for Nexus. You know, he says he has no connection to Nexus, and then we look at the Nexus corporate documents from 2 years ago, and he's listed as a director. He says he has no connection to Nexus. He switched his address the day I was served from the Nexus compound to a separate address. It's mind-boggling, and the goal for them isn't – they know this case is going to go nowhere, but the strategy of what they do is they – file these lawsuits, and we have actually a video clip of them talking about them doing this to somebody else. It's not a strategy about winning or trying to say, well, we lied. That's not what it is, even though they say that. What they're trying to say is that you wrote something we don't like. We are going to make you pay for that. Now, we're going to sue you, but we know we're going to lose that, but you're going to have to pay for attorneys. You're going to have to pay for the time that it's going to cost you to travel to court. You're going to have to, you know, pay a bunch of money to do it. And we actually have video of the guy that's suing me saying that that's what he was doing to a couple that wronged them, saying that it was going to cost them, and he was boasting about how it's going to cost them $25,000 to $50,000 to defend the lawsuit. He not only named me in the lawsuit, he also named one of our viewers who shared the article, and it named her, so she's now responsible for coming up with her attorney to defend a frivolous lawsuit. Because the thing about lawsuits, if you don't defend yourself, they can file for summary judgment and all that stuff and actually file liens on your property and all that just for you not answering it because it's frivolous. So you're literally forced to spend money to defend yourself when you're completely in the right. You know, we've talked to attorneys. I'm actually going to have my attorney on next week, but we talked on my show, but we talked to attorneys, numerous attorneys, and there's it's surprising how many people actually do this for a career. There, you know, I talked to one attorney that's from California, and he says there's people that literally file lawsuits and just bombard with paperwork and paperwork and paperwork until people are forced just to give up, essentially, and say, how much will it take for you to drop this? We will never do that. We will never do that. We will keep fighting. We filed for a motion for sanctions. We are going to file a demur with prejudice on by the end of the month, and then we are going to file an anti-SLAPP lawsuit. Now, we know we're not going to get any money, but to me, an anti-SLAPP lawsuit is essentially a slap in the face to them. It means that we know they lied, and we're going to catch them. But, I mean, somehow they keep getting all these lawyers that just keep – participating in this sham, and there's so much more, but I mean, that's a 15-minute version of just how nuts this whole thing is, and just for trying to report the truth.
Yeah, and that's part of the woke crowd now, you know. And why don't you tell the audience, Steve, what can they do to support you and follow you?
Well, anyone that wants to see the complaint and support us and you know, our quest, you can visit citizenstringer.com/fight, because that's the biggest thing. We're going to document every bit of it. You know, we're such a, you know, when we do our lives, we have thousands of people that watch them now, our news shows and my show, Wake Up America. We have so many people that watch the show every day. This is just like I say to everyone, this isn't an attack on me. It's this. My news organization is called Citizen Stringer, because for far too long, mainstream media has controlled the narrative. I'm a citizen of this country. A stringer is an independent journalist, a freelancer. That's what a stringer is. This is a citizen freelancer, you know, journalist. We have writers. Our requirements for writing with us are that you don't have, you know, a career in journalism. We want people that actually live the life and understand and just want to get the truth out. So I, you know, all of you viewers, I would just encourage them to check out citizenstringer.com/fight and, you know, just fight, read about it, share it out to other people. That's the most important thing. It's not about money or anything like that. It's truly about just making people aware that this is going on. Cause it, you know, if they come after me, they're going to come after anybody.
Yeah, this is about standing up for what's right, for our freedom of speech, for our Constitution, and not allowing these dirtbags to continuously do this to people. If you really, truly want to see real-time news, go follow Citizen Stringer News. Again, I've watched it all last summer. They were the only network that I could find actually showing live video of the riots happening all over this country. And if you think they were peaceful protesters, you're dead wrong. Your media source lied to you. Steve, thanks for coming on the air and sharing your story. Man, you know me, I've got your back, and I won't let this go.
I'll keep on
bringing it up. And keep up the good fight, my brother. You're doing the right thing.
Will do. All right. Thanks, Jeremy. We'll see you.
You bet. Catch you later, man.
Bye.
All right, everybody, that was Steve Oatley from Citizen Stringer News. Again, I met him when he was Freight Broker Live, my favorite freight broker. He's had me on his show a couple times, and he's a really cool guy. Seems like he's got his head on square. What's happening to him is happening all over this country. The quote-unquote woke crowd, they will come at you and throw everything they have at you to shut you up so you don't speak, so you don't exercise your First Amendment right of freedom of speech. We all have the right to share our thoughts and our opinions. And in his defense, Steve's defense, to report on what actual news is and what is really actually going on. In this case, that BLM rally, where it sounds like it was a paid protest. But that it sucks for Steve is, you know, now he's got a $5.5 million lawsuit that he's got to defend. I just find it completely ridiculous. And
there's something screwy around here.
That's all I can say. What say you, Chris?
Wow, what a story. I was vaguely familiar with some of the details of what he had going on. I didn't know all that, you know, but I mean, this type of behavior is very typical of the left, the authoritarian left. You know, I'd have to look it up in the DSM, you know, but I think that there's a certain level of being a controlling person that actually is a diagnosable mental disease. And we joke a lot about, you know, how liberalism is a mental disease, which liberalism itself I don't believe is. But what we're experiencing right now is not actually liberal politics. What we're experiencing right now is leftist Marxist. And a classic liberal would be a guy like Tim Pool, you know, famous for his Timcast. And he is accused by the left of being a right winger, because, and this is what he tells them. He tells them, "I'm a liberal. I've always been a liberal. You guys just slid way to the left, and I stayed where I was. And so now you think I'm right wing." But this is very typical of authoritarian Marxist type personalities, where they honestly believe that your freedom of speech is limited to agreeing 100% with everything they say. And you're not allowed to have any other opinion. Yeah.
You know, there was an opinion piece in the Washington Examiner I seen earlier today about, I'm going to touch on the fact that you said, you know, the mental illness. An opinion piece in the Washington Examiner that I read earlier today was talking about how transgender people, let's quit pretending that they are okay, and let's call it what it is, and it's some form of mental illness. Now, that was an opinion piece in the Washington Examiner. Do you think that person that wrote that maybe hit on something? I don't know. That's a question you have to ask yourself. It's hard for me, and it's probably hard for a lot of people, just to accept certain things. I try to be nice to everybody that I encounter. But this whole idea that you have to accept me for who I am, or else we're going to cancel you, or we're going to sue you, or we're going to do this, or we're going to do that, because you disagree with me, that shit's got to stop, man, because it's what happened to the country of free ideas, the country of just doing what's right, God's country, you know, where we believed in God, country, and the Constitution. It took a hard left turn within the last decade. We're witnessing some really unprecedented times, where George Orwell, 1984, predicted, and it scares the living shit out of me, to be honest with you. I don't like it. I don't like the manipulation going on by our government and our media. The outright propaganda hit pieces that are being put out on individuals, including now Steve Oatley. He's got all the facts. He's got the video to back it up. He's got the documentation to back it up. And this is what the extreme far left does. Now, I'm not against left. I'm not against Democrats. As a matter of fact, I have a lot of friends that are Democrats, and I once was a Democrat myself. I voted Democrat my whole life up until recently. But I realized after I took a long, hard look at myself that the Democratic Party does not align with what I believe in anymore. They did under JFK. They believed in less government, They believed in the working class, the blue-collar workers. Now, in my opinion, the left has turned that corner, and they believe in special interests and lying to the American people using special interest. BLM is an example. They play people's heartstrings, and racial divide, and they create more racial divide to carry on that the motives behind whatever they're doing here. That includes you and I and a lot of people that I know have heard the name George Soros, and we're not allowed to talk about that. We're not allowed to talk about the funding he puts in allegedly to federal judges and state judges to get them installed into office. There's a lot of shady shit going on in the behind the curtains, man, that has really ruined this country, and it's going to take, if we fixed it tomorrow, it would take decades to heal from. So that's just my two cents on it, Chris. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it popped into my head, and I wanted to get that thought out before I lost it about that Washington Examiner opinion piece. But you might be onto something there.
Yeah, I mean, we're at a point in this nation, the division has become so strong that there's pretty much no coexisting under one form of government. The left to be handled a little bit differently under a constitutional republic. They want to burn the entire building down and build something different. They don't want the Constitution. They don't like the Constitution. They are rallying behind invalidating the Constitution in the full belief that the elite and powerful people that they used to protest against, it wasn't that long ago when the left actually didn't like the billionaires and the trillionaires of the world. They called them the 1%. The wealthiest 1%. They had an entire global movement called, you know, the Occupy movement that revolted against being controlled by the wealthiest of the wealthy. And now all of a sudden, and I think they're blind to the fact, they've actually become the pawns of the very people that they were protesting against just a few short years ago. And now they've allowed these billionaires and trillionaires to convince them that it's really those small business owners, those family-owned businesses, those are the real enemy. Those are the people that are taking the money from you, and you should be fighting them. And then all the big corporations went out on this woke parade and said, yeah, we're behind you. And so now they got these people rallying behind bringing in this totalitarian system. And I think they very naively believe that once those very rich, very powerful people are able to get popular support to do away with the rule book that governs them, that being the Constitution that restrains their power, I think they honestly believe that these rich, powerful people are still going to have their best interest at heart. There was a term for that. Stalin referred to it as useful idiots because they're very useful in tearing down the current power structure, and they're too idiotic to realize
that. Almost like the Stockholm syndrome.
It is. It is. They have completely fallen for a system of lies, and they're upset with income inequality. They think it's unfair that certain people in a capitalist society that are innovative and creative and that are able to obtain wealth by creating jobs, they don't think it's fair that those people have more money than them. So instead, they're advocating for a system where they're going to turn all the power over to the political elite who's going to enslave all of us. We're still all going to be poor. And now, instead of the people who are innovative and creative and coming up with good, useful products that people enjoy and using that, to obtain wealth, in a system where anyone can obtain that wealth. They're going to instead just hand all that power over to that small group of people and allow them to live like kings and queens off the backs of the labor of the people, except under that system, you don't have a ladder out of poverty. You don't have the ability to go out and create something innovative and become wealthy off of it. You are a slave to the government, and the government literally lives in palaces off of your labor. It's an awful system that they're rooting for, and they're going to be the first one when things aren't going the way they thought they would and they want to take to the streets and protest, that they suddenly discover that under the system they just helped bring in, they get executed for doing that.
Look at what's happened to the left here. Let's just make, I'm going to give you a few examples here in the last couple of weeks. If this hasn't woken you up a little bit to what's going on with their whole narrative on the left, I don't know what will. First, you have Cuomo getting fired from CNN for trying to help his brother Cuomo in New York, the governor at the time. Basically, he was going after the people accusing his brother of sexual assault, trying to discredit him and using his power in the media to do so. Now you have Don Lemon reportedly was texting Jussie Smollett, letting him know that the police weren't believing his story. And now, today, Jussie, what's that?
I said, with privileged information. That wasn't publicly available information at the time. He had contacts through CNN within the police department, you know, media informers within law enforcement. So that was that information that they didn't believe his story, that was not for public release and was something that was still considered, you know, like an investigative tool. So he was basically leaking inside information and pretty much obstructing law enforcement's investigation by tipping off Jussie.
Yeah, and now today Jussie Smollett was found guilty of 5 of the 6 charges against him in the court by the jury. The one thing I'm going to say about the Jussie Smollett case, I just hope, me personally, I just hope he doesn't beat himself up over this.
I see what you did there, and that's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I had to, man. Sometimes we got to laugh, right?
Right. I can't wait to see what the headlines are tomorrow. It's going to be something like white supremacy wins again or something ridiculous like that.
Fucking crazy, man. You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medicated.
I should be medicated. But no matter how much I medicate myself, I don't think I would lose my mind as much as the good folks at MSNBC, because whatever the hell they're smoking over there is extremely powerful, and I just don't even know where to get my hands on it.
Maybe we should start advocating to see if we can find out who's in charge over there. We can get some of that. Maybe you got to have a special pipe. I'm not sure, but yeah, they're... And, you know, you look back at the start of this Jussie Smollett story, okay? The guy says he got attacked and beat up by 2 guys because he was gay, and they were MAGA wearing, they had MAGA hats on. They were Donald Trump supporters beating up a black gay man, you know, the whole narrative that they pushed through. And the text messages that they showed as evidence. And when the prosecutor started using Jussie Smollett's actual text messages that had the N-word in there, Jussie Smollett gets mad at the prosecutor and starts yelling at the prosecutor, quit using the N-word. It offends me. It was his own words, ladies and gentlemen. This goes right back to what you said, Chris. Are they mentally insane? Are they mentally ill? Do they need help? What in the hell is going on? That just doesn't happen. Hey, by the way, I don't want to get too deep into this without letting you guys know the guest call, and those of you that are listening on the internet, you are welcome to call in at 516-387-1733 and join the conversation, share your opinion, even if you disagree with us. As long as you keep it civil, we'll put you on. That number again is 516-387-1733. And once you get through, just press the number 1. That lets us know on the switchboard, hey, I want to talk. I got something to say. And we'll throw you on. Absolutely. But, yeah, so back to the Jussie Smollett story. That's what they're – not to mention what Jussie Smollett's attorney tried to get a mistrial on. Did you hear about that, Chris, where he said the judge lunged at him?
I heard the whole – the judge lunged at me. I'm trying to figure out how exactly a judge lunges from behind – a desk. Did he jump over the podium? You know, I've not seen any video myself. From what I've heard, the judge just looked at him and raised his voice a little bit. But you know, that's the whole words are violence. The whole words are violence movement that we see these days from people who clearly have never experience real violence, because if you've ever experienced real violence, you definitely understand the difference between words and violence. It's pretty distinct. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I'm honestly, and I think I can speak for, I want to guess 200 million other Americans. I would hope that was closer to 300 million, but I'm just really tired of everybody being offended by everything. You know, Representative Jeremy Munson mentioned Massey, Representative Massey's name earlier tonight. And he recently took a picture with his family, a Christmas picture, where they were all holding guns.
Oh, yeah.
And that story blew up the... I mean, the liberal left's heads exploded. Like, there was brains all over the walls everywhere. They went absolutely bonkers, man, over a frickin' picture of a representative with his family holding guns. And so what did Lauren Boebert do in response to that picture? She did the same thing. Of course, she likes to take that little gas can that she has hidden in her trunk and just toss it over there on the fire. I find the humor in it when she does it, but then again, on the same token, I'm like, okay, listen, I know you want to remain relevant and stuff, and you're doing a fine job of that, because I do like some of her stances, but let's not, like, go looking for the fight, but when the fight comes to us, we can defend ourselves. You know what I'm saying? So that's just my opinion on it. But
I agree there.
What were your thoughts on that, Chris?
You know, we all hate trolls when they come at us with ideas that go against our idea, right? If you're on a page that's conservative or libertarian, you know, of course, there's nothing you hate more than the liberal troll who runs in there, you know, and yells, you know, words are violent, and Kyle Rittenhouse is a murderer because he successfully defended himself against someone who was trying to kill him. By the same token, we tend to love trolls when those trolls are on our side, right? Everybody hates a smart ass when the smart ass is against you, but you love the smart ass when you agree with what that smart ass is saying, right? So it's kind of a love-hate thing. We love instigating people that we don't agree with, and we hate being instigated by people that we don't agree with. But anyway, I think I mixed up some words there. But the point I'm getting at, you know, at some point we got to stop some of the juvenile behavior. And we got to stop instigating each other and at least make an attempt to start holding some civil conversations. You know, there's so many people out there that are so polarized and have only heard information from their echo chamber. You know, you're never going to steer someone to your side by being a jackass to them. You know, and it's hard to do sometimes. And I'm one of the worst ones. I've definitely been known to unload with both barrels on people, especially in internet comments. And I'm trying to change that about myself. I'm trying to become a better person. And I'm trying to maintain a certain level of patience and just start pointing out factual information that I feel that they are missing. And I try to do it in a civil way without being condescending. Because I'm going to tell you, I try. I know it's hard.
Warning. Bullshitter alert. Bullshitter alert. Warning. Bullshitter alert. Bullshitter alert. Warning. Bullshitter alert.
Well, I think
come
I got
now.
My point across there.
I'm trying. I didn't say I have achieved it. I said I'm trying. But we do. We really do.
Yeah, and you know, when I seen Lauren Boebert do that, I did chuckle. I ain't gonna lie. I chuckled a little bit, but then I thought, all right, come on. You know, it's just like when she said she wanted to nominate Kyle Rittenhouse for the, what was that, medal, whatever medal, some medal. It's her digging her nails under the left, their skin, you know, just scratching that chalkboard, trying to get a reaction out of them. We're not going to make a change in this country if we keep on, you know, throwing eggs at each other. I'm not saying you have to agree with each other, but when you know there's a sensitive subject on the opposite side of the aisle, I don't feel that there's a need to continue razzing them or bringing that subject up. You know, in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, he was exonerated from all the charges. Those of us that agree with the Constitution, we got the judgment that we felt was needed and deserved and was right. At that point, we took a sigh of or a breath of relief because now, you know, we all knew the implications of that trial would have been an attack on our Second Amendment rights and our right to defend ourselves. And justice prevailed, in my opinion, and in a lot of other opinions. So we got the verdict that we were looking for. So for Lauren Boebert to come out and say, you know, I'm going to nominate him for this medal, or okay, just calm down. Let's enjoy the fact that we still have a judicial system that works with the way it's set up, and our Second Amendment rights are what's the word I'm looking for? Protected and justified here. Yeah. So. And again, I like Lauren Boebert. I think she's got some great ideas. She's very fiery and she's full of fire. And just tone it down, just a hair a bit. Well, the left does it. Just because somebody else doesn't mean that you have to do it. You know what I mean? Let's just move on here and try to fix what the hell's wrong in this country.
We can't stoop to their level, you know. But I
exactly.
mean, you know. Civil discourse is a lost art in this country. And I mean, I'm going to tell you, I mean, there was a time going back a while ago that I was a pretty hard right conservative. I really was. You know, I've lived in some very rural, very white Christian areas, you know, including, you know, rural parts of Texas. And I did. I kind of had that hard right conservative viewpoint. And what kind of got me out of that was opening my ears, opening my eyes, kind of getting out in other parts of the world and experiencing and listening to other people's viewpoints. You know, your mind, the human brain, it tries to make sense of the world around. And you do that, your brain constantly does that based upon the knowledge that it has. And so things can make perfect sense to you if you're only aware of your viewpoint. But when you're confronted with some factual information from whether it be other cultures, people in a different neighborhood than yours, or what have you, when you start really opening your mind and your ears and hearing other ways of life, and you start understanding and hearing people's reasonings for the beliefs they hold, you can really open up the doors to having a conversation where their beliefs, just like yours, are based upon their point of view from their perspective in life. And if we just sit here and scream at each other and yell at each other and shout over each other and refuse to hear or open our mind to the fact that there might be a good reason someone has another point of view than us, then we lose out that ability to understand each other. And there's right. been a lot of that happening in this country where most of the people who are out there just screaming white supremacy about the Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, verdict, they still don't know the actual relevant points of the case. You know, that they still
they had a feeling.
They don't have the information, and they're closed-minded. They're not going to listen to the information. And if you tell them information that goes against their belief, they're going to call you a conspiracy theorist. They're going to call you a liar. You know, they're going to say that's not true. And they're definitely not going to
Trump
run back. And that's all polarization. Right.
It's all Trump's fault.
But that's all the result of polarization and tribalism. You know, and this belief
right.
that your side, your team, your tribe is correct 100% of the time. And whether they're wrong or not, you have to back your tribe no matter what. And you just close out any information that goes against your belief, and that's where we are. And I don't know how we're going to go about undoing that, because we're battling against a whole lot of
shut off
nature.
The TV.
That's a good start. That's a real good
yeah,
start.
Yeah, shut off your TV. Quit listening to these mainstream media talking heads that are there to make money and ratings. Chris Cuomo, whatever the F his name is, sayonara, sucker. And trust us, the country is going to be way better off without assholes like you spewing your bullshit to people and lying to them. You know, another thing I wanted to bring up real quick is the Ghislaine Maxwell trial is happening. You know, they took this week off, I believe. They've taken a break or whatever, which, okay. But we found out that the FBI uncovered 20,000 images from Epstein's mansion in Manhattan, and none of those are being entered in the Ghislaine Maxwell case. None of them. 20,000 images. Why is that?
Right. Just like the victim that alleged that she was assaulted by Prince Andrew. You know, they decided for some reason not to call her as a witness. So she gets no
yeah.
Witness.
It's like Jack, what is his name on Twitter, Jack Posobiec. He said that this isn't an investigation, this is a cover-up.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
I tend to, yeah, I was just going to say, I kind of agree with that too. But, you know, it was back to how are we going to fix this is a breath of fresh air was Representative Jeremy Munson when he said, you know what, we have to hold the Republicans' feet to the fire also as a Republican. And I respect any politician that says that statement, because that means he's got integrity. You do what's right, even if it's your own tribe, you know, dancing on the hill, yelling kumbaya. If you know it's wrong, you got to stand against it. And anybody that knows me, they know I have I'm very passionate and I'm very strong to my convictions. But I'm not always right, even though I think I am. But I can at least admit it. That's called integrity, and I appreciate anybody that displays integrity. Just tell me the truth, even if it offends me. I might get pissed off about it, but you know what? At least I know, and I'll get over it. So you have that.
You
but,
know,
I've
come a long way myself, just having listened to some people and what they had to say, you know, and things that I used to dismiss. And a lot of those things that I used to dismiss and call people crazy for started becoming alarmingly true in 2020 and 2021. And I realized that some of those people weren't the whack jobs I thought they were. But I have to say, I mean, I do have some optimism, you know. One of the things that's going on, first let me say I'm really proud of our juries as of late and the decisions that they've been making. Obviously, they're doing a good job of taking in all the relevant information versus what the public in general knows, you know, because the general public only knows the media version, which is twisted and slanted. And you know, obviously the Rittenhouse jury, you know what? They peeled away all the hoopla that the media created. They looked at the actual facts, and they arrived at what I believe was the correct decision. Also, you know, down in Georgia, the murder trial involving the murder of Aubrey Miller.
No,
I can't remember his last
Ahmaud
name.
Aubrey.
Ahmaud
Aubrey.
There we go. Yeah, thank you. You know, I went into that trial having, you know, watched actual videos of what happened there and knowing the things that I knew about it from doing the research that I do. And I pretty much went into that trial knowing, I'm like, oh yeah, they're going to be found guilty. I don't see any other way they can't be, because if that was a clear cut case of murder in my opinion. And obviously the jury agreed. You know, they looked at all the facts and circumstances and said, yeah, they pretty much killed this guy in cold blood. You know, so there's another good jury verdict. You also had the, what was the other guy? Was it Sims? Was that the last name, Sims or Simpson?
You're talking about the black guy down in Florida, right?
The one that actually shot police officers.
Yeah, that's the black guy down in Florida. I think it was Sims, Sims Jr. I believe
no
that.
Media coverage. Yeah, it got no media coverage. It got
none,
coverage.
Zero.
But, you know, that was another case where I think the media recognized that the decision was going to go, you know, in a positive direction, so they didn't want to talk about it, you know. But, you know, the police officers in that case, they were wrong in the way they executed things, and they created a self-defense situation that justified, you know, the outcome. And, you know, the jury made the right call there. And now we got the Jussie Smollett case, or as Dave Chappelle likes to say, Juicy Smollier, the French actor. yeah. You know what? And obviously the jury, you know, saw through the bullshit there. And so our juries, the media is working overtime trying to sway public opinion against better sense. And if they see that the case is going to go in a way that's not going to be controversial, they're just not going to talk about it. So
interesting, though, is that that guy in Waukesha, Wisconsin, that ran over all those people at the parade. I don't hear nothing coming out of the media on that story. Absolutely nothing.
Because he's not a terrorist, you know. Running over like 60 people isn't an act of terrorism, apparently.
Yeah, and even out of the White House, when they ask, you know, Jen Psaki, They're like, what is Biden's position on that? And she said, well, we're in very close contact with authorities there, and we're waiting for the evidence to come out. Waiting for the evidence. We have multiple cell phone footage videos of this guy swerving back and forth and running people over.
What evidence
are you looking for?
Back, yes. The evidence has to circle back. So we got to wait for it to circle back.
Yeah, you know what? I'm standing on the edge of that whirlpool of circle backs, and not one of those damn things that she says is going to circle back is circled back yet. So I'm assuming that when those things start circling back, I'm hoping by then America wakes up and they start removing those people from offices, from the office in handcuffs, because those guys are criminal, dude. Man, they're horrible.
You know, I want to go back to like 70s and 80s, like disco era, where by now the circle back would have been a dance move. You know, I'm offended circle back isn't a dance move yet, Jeremy.
Well, I'm going to announce something to the audience since you said that. We are working on doing a live broadcast of the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. And once we get that to happen, we will have a new dance called the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show Circle Back Dance. And Chris will be performing that one.
I don't know if I can get that one past the censors. You don't want me to do a dance move. It's pure comedy, if I do. I'm just saying.
You better get with your choreography. Choreography.
Jeremy, sometimes I make myself laugh so hard
I start choking. Sorry, excuse me. No, what I was saying that you need to get a hold of your choreographer.
That's going to be my wife. She's going to be my choreographer. So, Carla, if you're listening, you are responsible for using the motivation of all those hours of Dancing with the Stars that you watch, and you have to come up with a circle back dance for me. So apparently I can do it on camera for the Disrespected Trucker radio show / podcast, whatever we're going to call it.
Yeah. And I have a feeling she's going to be sitting at the courthouse tomorrow morning to file up those papers that you so desperately don't want to see.
Oh, if she's listening to this, she's probably choking on her vodka laughing right now.
Hold on.
Parental guidance is suggested.
There you go. Well,
I don't
Chris,
know if she's listening to
us. Oh, I mean, how can you not listen to us? I know I'm funny. Hey.
I'm not. I just try to be serious, and it comes off humorous to people that don't understand my, position in life. I don't know.
Hey, man, we had a great show tonight. Just a small recap. Starting off with Representative Jeremy Munson out of Minnesota. I sure appreciate his time. He certainly didn't have to take the time out of his day, but he did. That should show you what kind of representative he is to talk to two slugs like us. Also, Stephen Oatley from Citizen Stringer News. Go check that guy out, too. That's Citizen Stringer News. You want to get real news, folks? You're going to get it there. Trust me. We watched it all last summer. So we also want to thank Stephen Oatley for that, too. It's good when you meet your connections through everything that you're involved with, and you reach out to people and they listen and they genuinely want to make this world a better place. You might not agree with some of their stances on things, and you don't have to, but keep in the back of your head, try to remain neutral. It's a problem that I've had for a very long time, and I'm working on that, and I'll play that Bullshitter Alert song as soon as we get off the air. But no, I have. And I see things a lot differently than what I had, you know, 2 years ago. And you must remain objective until you get all of the evidence, like that Michigan school shooter, them charging the parents. You know, you look at the voice of public opinion, and they want to hang these parents. It's not as simple as that. Yeah, we heard one press conference. Right. Let's just give it a second and let's get all the info. It's the same with Waukesha too. Yeah, we've got video footage of that guy doing what he did, but let's get the info before we let the media sway the public opinion. And that's, you know, that's all I'm going to say.
It's just like the Nick Sandman case. You know, when I saw the initial story, the initial media coverage of Nick Sandman and the whole story they had about how these rich high school, you know, these rich private Catholic school kids were there taunting Native Americans, and they showed the one little video clip they showed, I wanted to kick his ass. I really did.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just like, and that kid just needs an ass whooping. And it wasn't until after, you know, all the facts started coming out and I actually got to see the entire video, not just a little 8-second clip, to see what was really happening, you know, that I realized, like, wow, okay, like, I'm a guy that already knew you can't trust the media, and they got me on that. And so I was drawing myself even more from falling for the media trap, where they basically follow a classic literature type of thing where there's a protagonist and an antagonist, and they decide who's going to be the antagonist and who's going to be the protagonist, and they take the antagonist and they just demonize the hell out of them. They leave out any information that makes them look like any type of worthwhile human being, and they enhance any information that makes them look bad. And then they go to the one they've decided is going to be the end or the protagonist, and they make them look like an absolute cherub angel, and they wipe away anything that suggests that they may have been doing something bad. And they create a classic literature novel where they create a story that doesn't even resemble what actually happened, but there's a definite good guy, there's a definite bad guy, and everybody divvies up and takes sides. And then they start releasing some of the other information incrementally over time. And by that time, everybody's already picked what side they're on, and nobody will back off of that. And then that becomes a huge argument, and it keeps the clickbait going. It keeps people clicking on the articles. It keeps the content coming in. It gets the website views up. It gets the video views up. They rake in the cash while we're all out here beating each other to death on the street over a story that's not even real.
Right. Yeah, and that's our today's political and media climate in a nutshell. But you know what? We had fun tonight. We originally were going to talk about Gary Webb to back up our previous episode involving MENA, Arkansas. And I'm not going to say right now that we'll get to Gary Webb next week because things change so fast. Especially as of late, I can't promise that we'll get to that next week. I'm hoping we do, so we can continue on with talking about the Iran-Contra scandal and get to the Iran-Contra scandal so you guys can understand the details of what was all involved in that, that has some major, major government involvement in.
Well, it ties in really well, you know, with what happened with Steve Oatley there with this, you know, Citizen Stringer News. Because it was kind of the same thing where Gary was reporting the truth and he got decimated for it. It kind of like they're trying to do to Steve right now. So, I mean, if we can get to it, I'd love to try to get to it if we can, because it definitely ties into what we're seeing continue to happen. There is a war on actual journalism in this country. Steve Oatley is a prime example of the war on real journalism that's being allowed to take place, and so is Gary Webb, and of course the government just continues to, you know, cover up the bad things that they do and let us let us fight amongst ourselves on what we perceive as the truth. Because, well, it's a divide and conquer strategy, and if they're dividing us, who do you think they're going to conquer?
Yeah, exactly. So, well, let's just end this episode. This has been a great episode. I don't want to overtalk it, and plus, I got to get up early in the morning. I got to get up at 5, and that's too early for me. Yeah, we'll end this episode, guys. And every one of you that joined us tonight, please share us out. The more viewers we get, the better our shows are going to become. And we can move on to doing live broadcasts through video. As soon as we start getting a little bit more income in to help us buy that equipment, because right now it's just all us, brother and sisters. So we do appreciate you listening, and we're honestly trying to spread a message, let you know what our government's up to, what our media is up to, what's going on in the real world, and we insert our opinions in there. So everything that we say isn't necessarily the views of our guests or any of that. It's just our opinions. So take it for what it is. And I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us tonight here on the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show, Episode 11. And we will see you next Thursday night at 7 p.m. Central. And, Chris, I'll talk to you tomorrow, my brother. And you all have a great night, and God bless.
All right. Sounds good. See you later.